This is Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
our new life regions
to hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Make sure to head over to MetalNexus to get all your viewer news, reviews, interviews, and the archives of this very podcast, the Talk To Me podcast. This is episode 167. First off, we've got the great Chuck Billy of Testament on to talk about The Chief, the ongoing Slayer tour, and so much more. After that, we talked to Hanno from Mantar, great two-piece band from Germany. Thoroughly enjoyed talking to him. And then we round out the day with Richie Cavalera, son of Max Cavalera, vocalist of Insight. Jam-packed episode, so let's not talk too much prior to the interviews. But I did want to say that, A, I went and saw Marilyn Manson, and throughout all of the talks about Marilyn Manson and where he is in his career, had a great time at the show. Thought the show was fantastic. He played four songs off Antichrist Superstar, so that's all I was happy with. And a short set, but it was a small, intimate show, and I had a blast. And, as for, some of his latest shows haven't been all that great, and he's been drunk or on drugs or whatever he's been doing lately. He put on a great show here in Louisville, and I enjoyed it. I did get the time for the head interview at the Rockin' Pod Expo. Brian Head Welch of Korn will join me on stage at the Nashville Palace, Nashville, Tennessee, August 25th at 2:15 in the afternoon. $10 to get in. From what I can tell, he's going to be doing about an hour's worth of signing and then do a couple hours of other podcasts, but I get him for 45 minutes live on stage. So yes, live Talk To Me, August 25th at the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo, Nashville, Tennessee, 2:15 in the afternoon. $10 get you in, and you should be able to get yourself a Brian Head Welch autograph. So bring down your LPs, your 8x10s. I believe Mike G, former Talk To Me co-host and photographer extraordinaire at MDG Rock Photography, will be down there. It looks like he will be bringing some of his Brian Head Welch prints to sell at the Talk To Me booth. So make sure to grab you a couple of those, get those autographs, put those on your wall, and be the envy of all of your friends.
Still love it loud?
So do we. Rockin' Pod returns to Nashville on Saturday, August 25th. Over 25 rock podcasts from all over North America recording on-site. Vinyl and memorabilia dealers selling the best in rock merchandise. And awesome rock musicians and personalities participating in signing sessions and on-stage panel discussions throughout the day. Special guests include current and former members of Korn, Kiss, Angel, Winger, Loudness, Accept, Bang Tango, King Tracy, as well as producers that have worked with Slayer, Ozzy, Alice Cooper, Seven Dust, and many more. More guests being added weekly. Don't miss your chance to be part of an awesome celebration of all things rock. Rockin' Pod takes place at the legendary Nashville Palace, August 25th, 2018. More details available at rockinpod.com. That's rockinpod.com. The Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo. Brought to you by Blind Tiger Record Club, School of Rock Nashville, and School of Rock Franklin, a DBG Productions event.
And Talk To Me is brought to you by Good Company with Bowling. Yes, that is my good friend down there, Scott Bowling, in Atlanta, Georgia. Make sure to head over to his YouTube channel, Good Company with Bowling. Scott Bowling puts on an amazing show. Nathan Mowry directs these now. He does all of the Judas videos. He is making Good Company with Bowling, which was a great show before, look even better. And what made me realize that was this last episode with Scott Bowling with Good Company was with Eddie Trunk, and it looked better than any that metal show you've ever seen or anything that Eddie Trunk does. It's just a good, intimate interview. He made Eddie Trunk look good, so that's got to be saying something for Nathan. So make sure to check it out on YouTube. The Eddie Trunk interview's up, the Rich Ward interview's up, the Brian Head Welch interview's up, Islander interviews, Stuck Mojo, Seven Dust, so much more. Make sure to check him out and let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. So without any more of my ramblings, let's talk to Chuck Billy. Let's listen to Rob Rivera's pick from the kit and get the latest from the Nonpoint upcoming album X, which will be out August 24th. Let's talk to Hano from Mantar, and then let's round it out with Richie Cavalera. Hello, Chuck.
Yes.
Hey, man, this is Josh Toomey with Talk To Me Podcast. How you doing?
What's happening, man?
Oh, just living the dream, getting to talk to you today.
Right on.
Very cool.
Right on.
Well, before we get too far into it, man, I just had something pop up on my Facebook that said Practice What You Preach was released 29 years ago today.
That's right. We just found that out this morning, so we changed our set for the evening and put Practice What You Preach in there tonight.
Oh, cool. Well, any thoughts about recording that album or putting that album back out 29 years ago?
Well, that was our first time we actually recorded back at home because the Legacy and New Order, we went to Ithaca, New York to record those records. And this was our first one we did at Fantasy Records back at home. So I think we're a little more comfortable. I think this was the first record that we actually recorded live. Everybody was in the same room and recorded at the same time, except for the vocals.
Well, very cool, man. It ended up being a classic album, and man, I can't believe it's already been 29 years.
Yeah, I know.
Before we get too deep into the Chief and stuff, I mean, you're out with Slayer right now on the Farewell Tour. Obviously, how's that going for you guys?
It's going awesome. It's a great tour, and it's definitely a great honor. We have a lot of history with Slayer, a lot of tours under our belt with Slayer, you know, a lot of friendship, you know, between Kerry and Tom and the other guys over the years. And it's definitely an honor to be here on their Farewell Tour and to see how they're doing the tour is awesome. If this is truly their farewell, they're doing it right. The show is amazing. Production, the band sounds better than ever. It's just it's a killer event, and I'm very happy and proud to be here and watch them, you know, go out in style if this is truly it.
Yeah, and for you guys to be like a first band of five, and now I guess you're the second band of five with Napalm Death added to the bill. I mean, it's just an absolute stacked lineup with, you know, Slayer, Lamb of God, Anthrax, Testament, Napalm Death. I mean, it's an insane package.
It's a great package. I mean, you know, I thought it was brilliant of the booking agent to suggest putting on a couple more bands and, you know, make it more of a little bigger of an event. And I think the plan worked because the houses have been packed. The fans have been loving it. It is a great show. It's, you know, it's been pretty awesome.
Yeah, it seems like just judging from everybody else, too, it seems like a lot of people are probably showing up early and not just kind of showing up for Slayer. I mean, they're showing up for the entire day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely coming here to get their money's worth because, like I said, it's a great lineup. Every band's a headliner, so it's like, you know, people get here pretty early, and you see some pretty fucked up people by the end of the night.
Right. Yeah, I will be seeing that show Sunday the 12th in Nashville. So
nice.
So we'll see how it goes on that one. So these are the last memories of Slayer. You know, what are some of your first memories of Slayer, seeing them or meeting those guys?
Well, it was early when we all started. So, I mean, definitely was just a lot of drinking and partying and hanging out. But, you know, what really sticks in my head is, you know, Clash of the Titans. I believe it was in 89 or 90 in Europe. And, you know, we had some great parties and, you know, one thing sticks out for me is, we were drinking at, in Poland, I believe it was. And I broke some glass in an elevator and cut my wrist open and came down to the bar, and Hanneman was there and Tom, and I think Tom was in the elevator with me, and Tom has no shoes on, and Hanneman was sitting at the bar, and I remember I just rubbed my hand all in Hanneman's blonde hair and got blood all in him. And then me and Tom decided, okay, I guess we probably should go to the hospital and get some stitches. And we proceeded to the hospital, and we were just wasted. Again, Tom's barefoot, and he's, you know, screaming at the top of his lungs at the doctor's office, "Satan rules your asshole," you know, and we went into the room together, and the doctor was shaking when he was trying to stitch me up. And I was like, just let Tom do it. Let Tom just stitch it up.
Wow.
So in any case, the doctor was really nervous and scared and did the shittiest stitch job on my hand. It was so bad. And my wrist looks terrible now just because of that. So that's one of the, you know, definitely one of the stories that sticks out, you know.
Well, and you have a constant reminder too on your wrist.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The one thing I've kind of noticed with Testament and Slayer, you know, obviously with the big four talk and, you know, who's in, who should be out kind of stuff. Are you, I guess my question is, are you kind of over the big four talk? You know, are you in the next four? Would you take a band out and put Testament in? Are you just kind of over that talk now?
Well, I mean, yeah, totally. I mean, to me, it was kind of ridiculous because when you say the big four, you know, it's a reference to back the big four back when we all were at our peak. And those four bands, first big four at that time, all those bands were either platinum or gold selling bands at that time. The next generation, which was right on the cusp of cracking at that time in 91, 92, you know, of course, would have been the Exodus, Testament, Overkills, and, you know, of the world that were right there selling a lot of records and had major record deals. And, you know, all of a sudden the music genre shifted, and you know, major labels started dropping metal bands. It kind of that's when it hit the wall for all of us second comers.
Yeah.
So when they say big four, yeah, it is the big four. You know, when they say, should you be part of that big four? No, we shouldn't, because we weren't at that level of success at that time. You know, so.
But you know, it must be nice though, just to be kind of in the conversation, I guess.
Well, I look at it as now, where are we all at today? Of course, yeah, Metallica's still crushing it, way out there selling platinum, leading the front. But all the other bands behind them definitely have dropped in sales considerably compared to where they were at their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, Testaments and Exodus and all those bands are much closer in sales to those other three bands.
Right.
You know, so it's definitely shifted. And yeah, I'd say where we are today, we're still here. We're still creating great music, and the fans are loving what all the bands are producing. So I'd say we're a little closer to each other now than back then. You know, the big four, yeah, that's the big four. The next four, yeah, there was a next four. But if you look at it all in one right now, we're all pretty much, you know, right there, you know, kind of ticket sales and sale record sales, and you know.
All right, well, let's get into talk about the Chief.
Yeah.
You know, what is the genesis behind the Chief, and maybe tell us what it is.
Well, the Chief was a vaporizer, signature series vaporizer I did with this company, Lord Vapor. I believe it maybe 2015, 2014, somewhere around, and we started it. And it's a weed vaporizer, you know. And when we first did this, of course, you know, it was at the beginning of, you know, marijuana starting to be legalized everywhere. And we had a really good run with the first generation of the Chief. Lord Vapor at the time kind of dwindled, and you know, their company kind of, you know, went to the wayside. So he ended up selling the company. A new guy bought it and approached me about, you know, wanting to keep the Chief signature series available. So I said, yeah, of course, I'm still interested. So what he did is he decided that, okay, he revamped the whole thing and decided, let's do three products, not just the Chief, and he wanted to expand it a little more. So I was said, sure, I'm down for that. And so the first product was the Chief vaporizer we improved, where the new one has a rechargeable battery, replaceable battery, and it also has a new mouthpiece that's it's magnetic, where the last time the old mouthpieces were they were breaking because the way you're trying to take them off.
Oh, okay.
So now the new one's much improved. It kicks ass. And that one we call the War Drum. And then we have a second product is an oil cartridge vaporizer that we call the Dream Catcher. And the beauty of this one is it looks like a Zippo lighter, and it can hold anything from quarter gram cartridges up to a gram cartridge of THC or CBDs.
Okay.
So the beauty of it is, you know, it does have a Zippo type container, so you can just close the lid and it protects the cartridges inside. And you know, I've been using that one a lot. I've just been using it, keep it in my pocket, and I charged it up the first day of the tour, and I still have it charged, so the battery life is killer.
Oh wow.
And it seems to be the one I've been using a lot more out here on the road right now. And then the third product is basically called the Tomahawk, and it's basically a marijuana pipe. It basically is a cone-shaped pipe, and it has a built-in lighter at the end. So you pre-fill and pre-load all these pods with weed, and you load the Tomahawk up, and you use it. And it's real inconspicuous because most people using a pipe, you know, it's a two-hand deal, you know, and it's not very – you know if someone's smoking a pipe.
Right.
You just know. But this, it's so inconspicuous. It's a cone shape. One hand, you just hit the button, the lighter lights, and it does its thing. And all three products share the same chief graphic that's on there as well. So it's a really good product line, and they're not novelty items. This is the real deal. You know, they work very well.
And these are all available at LordVaporUSA.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, and also we got the Chief of Thrash line, which is a merchandise line associated with the Chief. You know, it's got T-shirts and phone covers and mouth pads and all kinds of cool stuff you can order up with the Chief artwork on it.
Nice. So I currently live in Kentucky, which is not a legalized state just yet. What do you think it's going to take to actually just get it nationwide legalization? What do you think it's going to take, and how far away do you think
the president needs to wake up? I mean, I'm sure he's a businessman. He's got to see how, you know, the revenue it's generated for the states that have legalized it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I he's a money guy. I would think it would catch on. Of course, they're going to get, you know, people and religious people fighting it and everything. And it's still taboo a little bit, but it is growing rapidly. It's a definite growing business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty about vaporizing is, you know, I'm still a guy who I still love to, like, you know, roll a joint, smoke a joint. But the convenience of the vaporize is, like, if I go to, you know, basketball game, football game, plane flight, you know, the movies, I've always break out my vaporizer because it's very inconspicuous.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. But, you know, it's not only just for that. You know, I had a sister-in-law that passed away a little over a year ago from cancer. And she was an older lady that didn't believe in weed and was never smoked weed in her life. But when she got ill with cancer, doctor had recommended possibly using marijuana because she didn't have an appetite. So my brother called me and asked me if I could bring over a vaporizer and some weed and show her how to use it. And I did. And she used it and it worked, and it, you know, gave her an appetite. And, you know, the benefit of that, because I think people that are ill, especially if you're a non-smoker, you can't just smoke, fire up a joint. You know, you'll cough your brains out and hack your brains out, you know, if you never smoked before. But the vaporizer is definitely an easy way to ease into it, to get actually more beneficial. You actually smoke more of the weed. The weed doesn't burn. It actually just burns the crystals on the weed itself. So, and it's only burning at 420 degrees instead of, like, you know, 2000 degrees. So it's much better. It's not just for the stoner. It is for medicinal people who need it and need a device to use it without going and you know, smoking straight weed.
Right.
It does have its benefits to it. It's pretty awesome.
And that does show you how far along we've come when you've got actual doctors prescribing weed, basically, which is, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that would sound insane.
Yeah. I mean, I've even got friends that, you know, have dogs that had seizures, even the dogs, blowing dog, you know, marijuana dogs that help. I mean, it's proven to, you know, have medicinal, you know, uses for.
Back on Testament, and we'll get out of here, but, you know, the last couple of Testament albums have been absolutely, you know, fantastic. You know, where do you think that new spirit came from?
I think from 2005, once we had our reunion, with the original guys, with Louie, Alex, and Greg, and everybody, you know, when we had that reunion and we did some touring and we went out and hit the road, it was like a whole new breath of fresh air. It's like almost like we got the team back together, like the original team, and we're, you know, going to try to see this out and finish this together. And it was just this sense of confidence, I think. And, you know, you always have a friendly sense of competition when you're out there and you have other artists in your genre. But for some reason, when we got the original guys, there was just this sensation of that all went out the window. It's almost like we were like just happy trying to keep it together that we can keep the original guys playing, Alex and them in the band. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's when we kind of actually started, you know, the, you know, when, because we did like, I think, 3 years of touring, and we finally got to that point where we said, okay, it was only supposed to be one or two shows turned into 3 years. So what do we think about writing a record? And that's when, you know, I know Louie couldn't play drums anymore because of his arthritis. So, you know, Bo Staff came in and did the drums. And, you know, I think it was just that self of confidence. And I think, you know, we get along as friends and bandmates and better than probably we ever have. And, you know, it's hard to live with somebody in a submarine, you know, for months at a time. So I think all in all, everybody's just, you know, living good, man. And just, and just being really appreciative, especially me. I beat cancer. And so for me to have a second chance with my original band and still to play and put out good records, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we'll end on that, but let's go ahead and play a track off the latest album, Brotherhood of the Snake, and play us out of here, man. Which song would you like?
One of my favorites that's a lot of lyrics on it is probably called The Number Game.
All right.
That one's pretty awesome.
All right, guys, here's Testament with The Number Game, and once again, Chuck Billy, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man.
afternoon, everybody. This is Rob Rivera from the band Nonpoint. And this is Rob's pick from the kit here on the Talk To Me podcast. And yeah, before we get into the pick, I want to let you guys know that Nonpoint, my band, we're going out on tour here in a few weeks with He Is Legend and Letters From The Fire, starting August 21st and ending September 22nd in Chicago. August 21st, we start in Lexington, Kentucky at the Manchester Music Hall. And we end at the Bottom Lounge in downtown Chicago. And it should be a fun tour. It'll be 5 weeks. We're going to be hitting our hometown, well, home state of Florida, and our hometown of Fort Lauderdale. The day of our release of our brand new record X, which is comes out on August 24th, we'll be celebrating at the House of Blues in Orlando. And then the very next night at Revolution Live in Fort Lauderdale. So that's going to be a very special weekend for us, celebrating 10 albums, which is why it's called X, Roman numeral for 10. Being our 10th record, got 10 songs. should be a killer weekend there in our home state. For my pick this week, I'm going to pick Dee Snider. Very, very, very happily surprised hearing his brand new album, For the Love of Metal, that was produced by my friend Jamie Josta, who did an absolutely amazing job on this record. And apparently, reading an interview with Dee, he said that he didn't write anything, any music or lyrics on the album, that Jamie Josta wrote all the lyrics, and I believe all the melodies and hooks. If that's the case, man, what a killer job Jamie has done. And anyone who's looking for a producer in the future should definitely look up Jamie Josta if you want to get that hook. And hook written in your song. These songs are just incredible. I'm not sure exactly how many people contributed to the record. I know Howard Jones sang back up. I believe Dee Snider's usual bassist, Tanya O'Callaghan, I think is her name. She played on a song. I believe some of the guys from Skeleton Witch may have played. Whoever played and whoever actually performed on this record, it is absolutely a stunningly heavy, great record, very metal, and honestly, to top it all off, Dee Snider's voice is in just in top form. The fact that he can sing like that at his age is absolutely amazing. He definitely killed it on the record. I really hope there's more material like this from him. Like I said, Jamie Josta did an incredible job on this album. Jamie, if you listen to this podcast, you did a killer, killer job. And God, I would love to work with this dude on a future Nonpoint album. It was amazing, amazing, amazing. So without further ado, here we go. Tomorrow's No Concern. We
guys. We've got Hondo of Mantar on the line. They have a great new album coming out August 24th, Nuclear Blast Records, called The Modern Art of Setting Ablaze. Hondo, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Cool, cool. I wasn't even going to attempt the last name as a uneducated American. I wasn't going to touch it.
Oh, that's fine. I live in Florida for a few years now, and people stop trying to, so I'm just Hondo.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, it's not a very common name, at least over here. So yeah, you can be Hondo as much as you want.
And that's the funny thing. Yeah, as you said, there ain't not many people around with that name. So usually where I live, it's just one guy with that name. That's me.
Nice. So the new album, The Modern Art of Setting Ablaze, coming out, like I said, August 24th. The first song I've heard off of it is Age of the Absurd. And I saw somewhere where you guys were kind of, I guess called like death and roll instead of like death metal, like more of like a death and roll. And that guitar noodly line you've got going on there, if the music was any different, you would sound like it was straight out of like the 60s. I think it's amazing.
Never heard that before, but I take that as a compliment. That's funny. That's great.
Yeah, if the music was a little bit lighter behind it, that would totally be just, you could...
You say that it could be the Monkees?
Yeah, something like that. You know, like was with like, I could definitely see some sort of a frilly shirt and some hippie glasses, man. But I dig it, man. I think it's a great combination.
Good.
Cool. And, you guys are just a two-piece, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you pull that off live. What kind of rig are you running with that?
Well, actually, first of all, people just assume it's rocket science. It's actually not. I just play as many amplifiers as I can pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
And I also play through bass rigs, like just bass amplifiers and bass cabinets to provide the bottom end. Use some octaver pedals and also play a baritone guitar. Mm-hmm. And I got some bass strings on that. So... To take care of the low frequencies, and then I got that covered, and then I split the signal with some sort of split motherfucker. I don't know what that thing's called, and just like in three ways.
So, splitter, yeah, a three-way splitter.
Yeah, exactly, splitter. So therefore, I have like two guitar signals and one bass signal, and that's actually what other bands have as well. They have like two guitar players and one bass. Mm-hmm. Player is just one person, everything.
Well, at least it makes for you'll definitely be a tight band doing it that way, just one person.
Well, we ain't that tight, you would be surprised, but at least we're doing the same thing wrong all at the same time.
Right. I think there are a lot more bands popping up that are two pieces, like a band like 68 or Death Therapy, and obviously the White Stripes and things like that. I mean, do you enjoy being kind of the guy up front and doing, all of the musical stuff? Or, I'm assuming you've been in bands in the past. So, I mean, is this a financial move? Is this a creative move? Is this a control move? I mean, what is it for you?
Financial move. You're funny.
Well, it's better to split two ways than like, at least you're not Slipknot. That's and doing true. It nine ways,
Honestly, when we found this band 5 years ago, we actually been asking around in our circle of friends and no one wanted to join. We were thinking like, hey, get a third person at least, or a bass player, whatever. And everyone was like, nah, oh, here comes Hondo and the Range with another band project, blah, blah, blah. No, today they bite their asses. So,
right.
No, it was not a dogma concept thing. And, but as soon as we started jamming with the two of us, we figured out pretty soon, actually, that it works quite well. And me being some sort of equipment nerd, I had no problems in just, make it sound big and fat and huge. So we did not really miss someone. Therefore, it was more happened by accident, pretty much. But we learned pretty quick that we don't need another person. I personally don't think it's about... The amount of members you got in a band, it's more, let's say, about a certain vibe and energy between the members. And it's just like a certain vibe between Arrange and me that works very well and creates this music. I think actually the music would be most likely less powerful with a third member, you know?
Oh, absolutely. If you're playing a large festival or whatnot, I mean, you've got to like fill it. Are you able to personally fill the stage, you know, with just yourself?
That ain't no problem. I move a lot. When there's space given, I move a lot. So, yes, I have no problems with that whatsoever.
I was thinking, though, that you guys could do like a 68 and Death Therapy and tour, and you guys could all be in the same bus and still have extra bunks left over. So it might be a financial need to team up with a bunch of two pieces.
That's one of the good things, that especially in the early days when there were absolutely no crew, that traveling was very easy, you know, and then still flying is, of course, way cheaper and comfortable and stuff like that, you know. So that there are some advantages. Yeah. Absolutely. But on the other hand, you have to know how to deal with conflicts way better, because just two people, it's like in a marriage or something like that. You can't escape. You're always together on the road, in the bus, in the plane, in a hotel room, whatsoever. So when you have like a five-piece band, you can chill with the drummer or the bass player or the second guitar player for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Let them steam. But no, when it's just the two of you, you have to deal with conflicts right away and get them out of the world. Otherwise, you run into problems quite fast.
So you said earlier you moved to Florida for a couple of years. What brought you to the States?
I met a wife, my wife. I met her a few years ago. And I actually always spent a lot of time in the United States for the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. Mm-hmm. Because I have a lot of friends over there. And then, you know, just due to the fact of me spending so much time over there, once ran into that special someone, got married, and the rest is history. So I stayed. And growing up in Bremen, northern Germany, I was ready for some sun in my life. You like Bremen, Germany is like a bad version of Seattle weather-wise.
Oh, wow.
So you get an idea. So I was ready for some sun, and I found that in Florida. And it's funny, I really love living in Florida, and it's so much – it's funny because the rest of the United States gives Florida so much shit. I love it.
Yeah, it's definitely it's got a reputation, but you know, a lot of the crazy news stories that happens always tends to come out of Florida. So, yeah, Florida's a special place in America, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny,
but it always has a great death metal scene down there. I was honestly thinking that might have been your draw to death.
There's a lot of good punk bands, especially where I live in Gainesville. You know, there's a lot of good punk bands going on, and still a lot of metal underground. I like it a lot.
So you kind of like journalist turned signed musician with your time writing for Guitar Magazine in Germany. I think doing this show for the last 3 years opened my eyes to so many things that I did wrong in the music business. Things that I looking, you know, hindsight being 2020, you know, probably took a left when I should have taken a right. Do you feel like kind of being on the journalist side for a while kind of opened your eyes to maybe how to put together a band and get it out there?
Well, I don't really know. To be very honest with you, we had no master plan when we got together and started playing music. We had no ambition. The only thing that we did was like, hey, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. But our main goal was just like to record a demo tape, like an actual old school cassette tape. But then that turned into a first record, and then we quickly got signed to Nuclear Blast, and the rest is history. But I don't know if I understand the question right, but I had no master plan whatsoever. The only thing I know, whatever in life, I tried very, very hard. The harder I tried, the more I failed. And the less of a fuck I gave, the things worked better.
Yeah, I definitely can agree with that. I guess I was just trying to say, maybe you could learn how the business works a little bit more being on the journalist side.
Business, because I've not only worked as a journalist, I also for many record labels. I worked as a promoter. I worked for distribution. I worked for management. I worked for what you name it. You know, I know a lot about the music industry, and therefore I didn't necessarily know what to do in order to get my band out there. But I first of all, I learned what I did not wanted to do or not do. That was very important, because as a matter of fact, you can try as hard as you want, but if your band sucks, your band still sucks. And if you can't have the craziest ass amount of contacts and whatsoever, and yes, maybe you can try and maybe you get a good or better support slot here and there, but at least at the moment when you try to present the music to the actual public that are not in any way involved in the business whatsoever, reality kicks in. And if your band sucks, your band sucks. Yeah. And honestly, I was trying to cover up the fact that I've been working as a journalist and in the industry myself, because I've never wanted to be accused that I would try to take any advantage or whatsoever. And it's kind of funny nowadays when we do all the interviews with the big magazines and play all the big metal festivals, I meet a lot of people who used to treat me like shit when I was still a trainee, when I was very young. It was like, funny, look at you, still have that old underpaid record label job because no one sells CDs anymore. It's funny.
That is, yeah, it's always nice to look back and I guess, who was it, Ozzy that said, you know, it's the same people on the way up as the on the way down, so you got to be nice to everybody.
Exactly, and that's why we're always very nice people. You can say a lot of stuff about Mantar, but we're usually very nice and polite to everyone.
So when I was given the opportunity to interview you today, and I was thinking back to, in high school 20 years ago, we had a German foreign exchange student, and we had a very small circle of metalhead friends, and obviously he came over and fit right in with us. But I remember he would always, at lunch every day, we would sit and we would pull out a bag of Doritos, and he would pull the, Doritos, what are these Doritos? I've never heard of them. And you'd be like, oh man, they're these great chips, you know, have some. And then the next day he'd be like, oh, what are these? And then you like realize he's just using the fact that he's German and, you know, he obviously knew what Doritos
Sneaky
were.
Sneaky bastard. That sounds very German to me. That's a good move. I'm going to copy that. Thanks, German fellow guy.
Yeah, I believe he was from Cologne. So yeah.
Yeah, Cologne. Yeah, that explains a lot.
But I remember when Rammstein first started becoming popular, getting back in touch with him and being like, you know, you need to tell me what these people are talking about.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny. Like, when I met my wife, she did not know a lot about German metal, but of course she knew Rammstein, because in high school in South Carolina, Rammstein was also a big thing for her.
He was he came over and he gave me a CD of I'm gonna say it wrong, but Bo's Uncles.
Oh yeah, that's a horrible band.
And then I found out, and I had like a poster of them forever because he gave me a poster, and I was like, oh, this is cool, and I put it up. And then within like the last year or two, I've kind of found out a few things about them. I'm like, wow, maybe shouldn't have had that poster up.
Yep, interesting past those guys.
So, what are your plans with the with Mantar, with this new album coming out, touring plans, stuff like that?
Well, right now we're pretty much in the middle of the festival season in Europe, as you know. Like, the metal festivals is almost it's a big thing here in Europe compared to the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have pretty much every weekend the big festivals like Wacken and Tons of Rock in Norway, Hellfest in France, and you name it, Bloodstock in UK. So we travel all around Europe playing shows and do all these big festivals, summer festivals. And in between, we promote the record, talking to nice people like you. And then we regain our strength for a few weeks. And then we're going to hit the road in Europe to play the first tour with this album, with a new album, starting in November sometime. And we invited our friends from Skeleton Witch to join us.
Nice.
For Europe, and two other cool bands from Europe. And there's going to be a classic four band lineup traveling from town to town with a big old nightliner and set everything ablaze, I guess.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, speaking of the festivals over there, you know, growing up in America and reading, you know, getting the import magazines with the ads for those festivals, and even seeing the lineups today, yeah, always jealous of those festivals.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's what my friends tell me too.
Yeah, I mean, America's catching up. We're getting a little bit more of the festivals here and there, and the destination festivals, but they're still a little bit too radio rock centric. You know, you're not going to find Obituary and Deicide on these festivals, but...
Or you have the opposite. You know, we played some American festivals, but that's more like extreme metal kind of stuff. We played Maryland Death
Fest Maryland
twice.
Death Fest, yeah.
We played California Death Fest. We played Psycho Las Vegas, and all that's great, and I love it. But it's, of course, not these traditional where underground and mainstream meet. And that's a good thing for the European metal festival, that you have Rammstein and Slayer playing, but on the other hand, you have small bands like us playing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and these, you know, some of those European festivals, you'll find, you know, Rammstein and Slayer playing alongside, you know, Katy Perry or something. It's a very odd odd mix over there.
Yeah, or at least more like moderate rock, alternative rock with extreme metal. You know, that's true.
Well, Hanno, man, it's been great talking with you. And I did want to end off this interview with playing Age of the Absurd. You know, do you have any story behind that? Maybe a little bit of like recording it or anything like that?
Well, Age of the Absurd. Third, it's just it's one of the earliest tracks we wrote for the new record, and I like it a lot. Maybe that's why it ended up pretty much opening the record after the intro, because it's catchy and it has a good introduction into the album. So if you like that song, you can rest assured that you like the rest of the record as well. So enjoy that song and. That song, lyric-wise, reflect or very, very the current times we're living in. Very interesting times, not only in the States, as well as in Europe, all over the world. Age of the Absurd.
All right, Hanno, thank you very much, and have safe travels out there. And when you get back over into the States, I will make it out to the show.
Thank you very much, Joshua. Have a nice evening, and thanks for having me.
The weather. you are the unforgiving. Cause people don't like to forget. You will wait for this forever. Cause they only forget when they're dead.
This is Josh
Matumi
with the Talk to Me podcast, man. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, man, all is well. Excited, leaving for tour tomorrow, and starts Friday, so all is on crunch time right now. It's all good.
You getting all those last practices in?
Oh, yeah, man, as far as that, and then all the other business, you know, trying to fill in some more shows and advertisement and all that. Oh, it's madness, but, you know, it's what I love.
Yeah, it's very cool, man. And what we're talking about is the Burn and Shred Tour. We've got Richie Cavalera of Insight on the line here. You know, the venues aren't huge. I mean, obviously, this is not going to be a huge tour headlining, you know, huge headlining tour. But, man, you're out there grinding, and I think a lot of people appreciate that.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a big step for us personally. You know, we've done endless support tours, you know, building the name and getting the name out there and, you know, just kind of trying to grab some fans, you know, that are coming over to our side. And now, you know, we're excited. You know, like you said, it's not the biggest places, but, you know, that's what you got to do to get to those big places. No artist that's in those big places ever, you know, just got there, man. You got to go through these steps, and we couldn't be more excited. Like, you know, tickets are selling really good. People are really fired up, and, you know, it's going to be a good feeling. Not crazy security and not barricades and bands, right. You know, will be easy to be accessible and no dressing rooms to hide in and shit. So, you know, this is us, man. It's where we do what we do really good.
Are you kind of a, you know, hang around the merch booth kind of guy and want to meet everybody and talk to people and stuff like that?
Oh, dude, the whole band. I mean, from the minute the doors are open to the, you know, even after an hour or two after we're done with our set, we're there, we're hanging out, we're partying. You know, it's we don't sell fucking meet and greets and all that lame shit. You know, we just we're here to be, you know, fans of music just like everybody else is, man. And I think building that realness is the most important thing that music needs now, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, the tour starts August 10th in Austin, Texas, and then it goes through September 28th in Phoenix, Arizona. And yeah, man, that's a nice 2-month tour there. And, you know, support from, how do you say the band name? Is it Athier?
That's what I'm going with at this point until I hear them announce it, you know, on the show. So that sounds correct, man. And they look like they're ripping and they're growing and they're getting their name out there. And it's really exciting, man. It's going to be a cool thing. And then Lodi Kong as well, right, in the second half. So that's going to rip.
Yeah, so the first night of the tour, you'll be by the stage waiting for them to be like, hey, we're Athier from blah, blah, blah. And you're going to be like, all right, I got it.
Oh, yeah. I'll be partying at the merch booth trying to catch what they say. And, you know, I'm big on watching every band, local, tour support, everything, man. So I'm going to be enjoying it for sure.
Yeah, there's nothing better than being on tour and finding a good local opener. You know, that's almost like a diamond in the rough, especially when you're going to be on a tour for 2 months. You know, you're going to go through a lot of, we'll call them 5 out of 10s. But then, you know, occasionally you're going to come across the gym and it's going to be a good night.
Yeah, and totally, man. And we, you know, we rely on them a lot. You know, they do the groundwork now. You know, a lot of these clubs and promoters, they don't really promote the best, and these bands really, you know, get the word out there, and that's the cool part. And, you know, the big thing for me with the locals is that they stay and watch the show. You know, we've done, you know, spotty, like, headline shows here and there in between tours and stuff, and that's one thing I've noticed is a lot of the locals will come, play, and then leave. And it's just like, you know, respect the show, respect all the bands, come, stay, party, you know, that's what being a band is, you know.
Yeah.
I know you got work and things, but if you're going to be in a band and go to a show and play and expect people to watch you, you better give the same courtesy to everybody else and, you know, kick it. Don't take your merch down after you play and leave. Like, that shit drives me insane, man. And, you know, I hope to not see that on this tour, because if I do, I'm going to have to kick some ass.
Yeah, and you know every single one of those bands that leaves early, later on in life, their bio says opened for, played with Insight. You know, they're going to drop your name from here on out, but they may not have the courtesy to stick around.
Yeah, man, that's just, you know, that's the one big issue I've found. And, I, you know, like I said, I hope,
you know, they stick around and just rock out and have a good time, because that's what it's about. You know, it's not about playing in your garage and just going and playing a show and saying, oh, we're done, we're out of here, you know. Like, it's a metal show. It's, you know, we're coming from far away, both bands are, and, you know, we love, you know, rocking for them, because in a lot of ways, these local bands are the scene. You know, they're still the bands and the people and the fans that are going out and buying the tickets and buying shirts and, you know, buying the CDs and stuff, so we want them to definitely feel the vibe.
Cool, cool. And the latest album you guys have out is 2016's Oppression, produced by the great Steve Evitz. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. What was it like working with Steve Evitz? I mean, he's one of my bucket list guests to have on here, and I've definitely been in contact about possibly doing a Snapcase Progression Through Unlearning episode. So I definitely love Steve Evitz, man.
Oh, man, like you said, the fifth member of this band. You know, we also just worked with him on our newest album that'll be out January 2019. Yeah, I mean, after Oppression, man, the vibe, everything went so smooth, but it was like we were missing time. You know, that's all we kept saying to each other was, oh, we wish we had two more weeks or another week of this, you know, just to really get an album to where we're 100% happy with it. Every album, you know, you put out and there's things that you notice later down the road that you're like, ah, damn. And with this time, you know, we were given the proper amount of time and a proper setup. And, you know, we had a vibe with Steve already built. So, you know, from Oppression to the, he's one of the coolest guys. He's no rock star. He doesn't force anything on you. You know, it's just a very comfortable kick-ass vibe. And, you know, we love the guy, man. And he knocked it out of the park on Oppression and absolutely grand slammed it with the new one.
And how was he with, like, doing your vocal tracks? Was he on you with, like, trying to do, you know, maybe different versions? Or was it pretty much like, here's what we have, let's get the best recording we have?
Yeah, and see, that again was cool, you know, going from the last album to this album, having the same guy. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew what I could do, and we had already done that. So it was a big thing of, hey, let's make the vocals a little more deeper and a little more natural. You know, because that's one thing I've noticed with a lot of the albums in the past is, you know, you have the crunch time again and you're copy and paste and shit, and it's not natural. With this record, we were able to record everything live take.
Nice.
So there's no copy paste. There's no, I sang every chorus you hear. I sang every verse you hear. You know, it used to be where you'd sing one chorus, they'd copy paste three of them, you were done. It was like, you know, just ridiculous garbage. And now, you know, getting to the level we're at, we're able to do it real. And, you know, he kicked my ass. Absolutely, man. Like, we would do 8-hour days, and the songs done the most, because we were really just, you know, we wanted it. It's the fifth album. We got to have it be everything we wanted it to be, and, you know, be that next level. And I think we captured it. And the vocal sound, I think, is the best I've ever had on a record, for sure.
And on the last album, you had Connor from All Hail the Yeti, and you had a guest spot from Jose Mangan on there. Any guest spots on this one?
Oh yeah, dude. We went with some cool brothers that have taken us on tour over the last couple of years, and, you know, really just were real legends to us, man. And mm-hmm. One of them's Kirk Weinstein of Crowbar and Down.
Nice. Fantastic.
And, you know, we just made this epic fucking doomy tune, and, you know, he kills it on it, dude. It's Kirk the second you hear it. You know, you're just like, hell yeah. And it's about like the end of the world and disaster and shit. So it's so cool. And I think fans of both bands and, you know, Kirk are going to love it. And finally, we went and got Chris Barnes.
Oh, wow.
You know, 6 Feet Under, Cannibal Corpse, huge, huge inspiration on the band and influence. And, you know, we toured with him last year, and we just had the best time getting high and talking conspiracy and all this crazy shit. And, you know, it just was like, man, you know, do a song with us. And, you know, he just brought in the most gnarly pipes ever, and it turned out so kick-ass. So I think fans have a lot of special things to look forward to, as well as, you know, your classic kick-ass inside songs.
Yeah, little known fact, Chris Barnes was the first rock star I ever met when I was 15 in 1994, so that's always good.
Hell yeah. It's rare to meet him, man. He's a chill, kickback dude, and, you know, everybody knows him from Ace Ventura, man, and that's, you know, always be the classic of him, man. It's just so cool to have him being a part of our record.
Yeah, what's cool about him too is I've heard him answer questions about Ace Ventura still, but he still like, seems to be into it. He's not, like, rolling his eyes at that question anymore. He's like, no, man, it was cool. You know, Jim Carrey was cool. Like, it's always fun to hear him talk about that.
He definitely accepts his past and his history and stuff. And, you know, like you said, it's really cool to just talk with him. And, you know, he's an interesting mind, man, and really cool to yap with.
And with Jose Mangan being on the last one, Jose Mangan, friend of the show, he, you know, he's definitely a honorary Cavalera, I believe, at this point, if I see everything correct.
Yeah, I believe he signed the adoption papers. I mean, he's definitely official, man. And, you know, we love the guy. And, you know, he comes from Arizona, and, you know, he does great things for a lot of bands that would have never had any exposure through the mainstream, you know, outlets that there are. So, you know, we just wanted to show him that, you know, we appreciate him. And, you know, it's cool to see since then he's done a lot of things with a lot of bands like Suicide Silence and, you know, quite a few other things. And, you know, we're just happy to let him know that, hey, you know, we love what you do. We appreciate those sound exchange checks that, you know, come from what he does. And, you know, they save our lives. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he's actually, you know, he's got a really good screaming voice. So, I mean, I've always kind of wondered why he's never actually just put a band together and done something. But, you know, he could definitely do it if he wanted
totally
to.
Yeah, totally true.
Or at least put out, the Jose Mangan solo album or something.
Yeah, I think he's just loving life, man. He's getting to be with any band that he really wants to and pump the things that he wants. And, you know, just another piece like you are and everybody else that, you know, keep this whole giant machine running, man. It's killer.
So, obviously, talking family, and the last name Cavalera in every metalhead's heart is a sacred name. And so, do you feel any pressure kind of living up to the Cavalera name?
Man, after, you know, what I'm going on, you know, 14 years of insight, and, you know, I've just kind of, you know, it's kind of just whatever now.
Yeah.
We're so focused on touring and making these albums and keeping, you know, everything rolling, and as well as him, you know, he's doing his 3-4 bands every year. And,
right.
You know, we don't even really get to see each other that much anymore, which is crazy. But, you know, all in all, it's what our family does and it's what we love. And, you know, we just are big on, you know, helping people, man, get through their day or, you know, feel real little relief from all that and just have a good time at a concert. And, you know, I definitely took a lot of craziness, you know, at the start, because I think that's just the way it is. You know, everybody thinks you're just another fake famous kid and this crap and all of that. And I think just through the years of, you know, relentless albums, relentless tour, you know, hanging at that merch booth and just showing people, hey, man, I'm a metalhead. I'm lucky with the situation I've been born into, but that doesn't change who I am and how chill and, you know, what I'm doing, how real it is. You know, it's not Max writing my albums and right. calling people, making sure I get tours. It's us, you know, just working, building contacts ourselves and, you know, just really kicking ass. I mean, if it was Max, I think I would have made one album and blew up and, you know, all that bullshit. And as you can see, that's not the case here. We've been in the trenches since day one and never really asked him for anything but a tour or two. So it's been quite a journey, man. But I think, you know, everybody's starting to just notice the band now, which is really cool.
Yeah, and it's great to see, you know, Zion and Igor Jr. out there doing stuff with Lodi Kong and you know, Zion doing the playing drums in Soulfly now. So, I mean, all the kids are out doing their thing, too. And I think it's, you know, it's fantastic to watch from the fans' point of view.
Yeah, and I, you know, always with metal, you know, Cavalera is in there, and I think continuing that legacy and, you know, the love we have for metal and that our dad has put on us and our mom has put on us definitely makes us want to see that continue and continue to thrive and be a Cavalera, being a part of that. So, you know, it's cool to do this, and it's going to be fun to go on tour with my little bros, teach them the ropes and, you know, really just kick ass every night. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, Soulfly was through here not too long ago, and actually I got to sit down with Max and do an interview, and Gloria, your mom, was very gracious to me, and I was very appreciative of that. And then, you know, afterwards, you know, watching Zion play drums was a sight to see, man. He's definitely fun watch.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Glow's just, you know, someone has to be the asshole, and, you know, sometimes people look at her and, you know, think that, and, you know, hands down, she is the one that brings these things to the fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Max, you know, he loves it and he does what he does, but without her and, you know, her love of just music and, people that, you know, oppressed and suffer, and the things that, you know, she comes from a family of, you know, people in concentration camps and grandparents and things like that. So to bring music to people in, you know, Afghanistan and all the crazy places they play, you know, it's a big deal to her, and it's cool to hear, you know, you give her love and everybody, you know, understand that, you know, she's a badass, man, and without her, a lot of cool shit wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And the, so yeah, like I said, the family affair with, you know, you on the second leg of the Burn and Shred tour, you know, Lodi Khan going out with you guys. And, you know, like I said, man, just the Cavalera camp kind of sticking together and, you know, being kind of being one for metal is a fantastic to see.
Yeah, dude, we appreciate to hear that, because like I said, you know, we love music. We love, you know, getting metal out there, and, you know, that's just what it's all about, because, you know, that's what we love. That's what we do. That's what got us through hard times. That's what got us through, you know, difficult situations, is being able to write these songs, go on tour and perform for people that really need it. And we're stoked, man. Inside Lodi Khan, it's going to be a fun time, and first time we've really ever done it. So we'll see, giving the fans a good treat.
Cool. And like I said, the tour wraps up October 28th, and you said the new album will be out in January. So what are you guys going to be doing in between?
Well, we got this headline show, and we're going to pop out a single, our first single from the record here in the next couple weeks, which I'm super stoked. It's not going to be a video or nothing, just digital, radio, you know, Spotify, that kind of thing. Just get the momentum out there and let people get their first taste of this record. And, you know, then we head off to Europe for pretty much the end of the year from November to December and do a tour with 6 Feet Under, and, you know, really just keep this machine rolling. And then, you know, January we'll have the album out and start the whole nother hurrah of madness, man. We're really excited.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And let's go ahead and end this off with a song off of Oppression. What song would you like to play, and then maybe give a little story behind it?
Yeah, I'm going to go Stagnant. You know, it's kind of the song from the album that rocks live. And it just goes out to all the lazy ass people in the world, you know, that don't want to do nothing, want to sit on their ass and expect things. It goes out to you. So continue being lazy and keep giving me the, you know, the inspiration to write these songs. So Stagnant, get heavy.
All right, guys. Well, this is Stagnant by Insight. And once again, Richie Cavalera, man, thanks for taking the time and good luck on tour.
Hey, thanks so much, man, for supporting music. Keep it heavy, man, always.
Don't burn this thing long.
All right, guys, huge thank you to Chuck Billy for taking the time, Hano for taking the time, Richie Cavalera for taking the time, and thank you guys for taking the time to check out the Talk To Me podcast each and every week. 167 episodes deep, and I can't thank you enough for all of the positive emails and reviews and messages I get on the internet. It's great. I love it. Love you guys. And a huge thank you to our good friend Scott Bowling and Good Company with Bowling. Make sure you're checking him out, letting him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. And I will see all of you guys August 25th, Nashville, Tennessee, at the Nashville Palace for a live Talk To Me with Brian Head Welch live on stage. Come check it out. Get some autographs and all that fun stuff. And meet all of your podcasting heroes and all of your musician heroes that will be there. My next show, I will be going to a Slayer. Got another interview with Gene Hoagland coming up. So this might actually turn into like a test a month. So we'll see how that works out. So thank you guys for listening, and I will talk to you guys next Thursday.